This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. It's Toni Quest back again. We're here at the Energy Stoners Cafe, and I'm so happy to have another guest on that I feel is fabulous. He's been on the show before. I'm considering this a follow-up interview. His name is Kenny Banda, and he is the founder and I guess president and chairman of the Banda Bola Sports Foundation in Malawi, Africa. Kenny, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
I wish it was under better circumstances because since we spoke last, just remind the audience that the last time we spoke, things seemed to be doing a little bit better over there. You were working with the children in the soccer club, and the girls were involved as well, and they were getting educated, going to school, and then COVID hit. Where do we stand now over there?
Well, it's been, like you said, the pandemic has taken on a different turn here for the worse the last few, I would say a few months. Actually, I was in Malawi in December to bury my sister who passed away in
Urachel,
but had nothing to do with COVID. She had existing health issues. So we went to Malawi knowing that the COVID was an issue. We didn't even know that they would be allowed to go because the guidelines were not set up to who can go, not go, you know? So anyway, December, we took her body. Her wish was to be buried in Malawi. And she lived here for so many, many years. But anyway, when we got there, we had to be tested here before we left. After the funeral, the same thing. We had to be tested there before we get back here. And we were told to go get tested in Malawi. You had to do it within 72 hours before you fly out. So, which was okay. So we understood that. But when we got there, the pandemic was not as pronounced. You didn't hear too many people with COVID. But we were told that the COVID was really attacking the people in the city. The more well-to-do people who live in, you know, big houses and they stay indoor most of the time watching TV and all that stuff. But the funeral was in the village, which is open air, and people there don't wear masks. Some of them they don't wear masks, but they don't believe in wearing masks, and it's almost like a taboo.
Tell me about the taboo.
They're thinking that because you're wearing masks, it means that you are the one who's got the disease, and sometimes people were being chased. They see somebody wearing a mask. In the beginning, they were chasing them. They have a disease. Get them out of the village. Get them out of the area. So there's no science-based understanding in the village. So everything's done by the culture and just the way they see things. So when we got to the village, that was very challenging for us to see folks moving around and without any mask. So anyway, at that time, the pandemic wasn't as pronounced in the village. We didn't hear anyone in the village that had suffered of COVID-19 until when we got back. I would say the 2 days after we got back, we just found out there's a variant from South Africa has hit Malawi. There were like 25,000 people who came from South Africa during the holidays, and they came into Malawi because in the holidays, most Malawians, they work in South Africa to make a living because Malawi doesn't have the economy to provide jobs.
Right.
So they were coming in from South Africa with this virus and that part of the COVID thing. And it started moving pretty fast in the area and people started catching it. And before you know it, now we're at the point where I'm receiving, you know, almost once a week, I'm receiving a text message. So-and-so passed away. So-and-so passed away. Because of COVID, and we had, as soon as we arrived here, we got a text message that the people who were attending our funeral, you know, passed away. You know, one of our friends, my former classmate. Also, she was like our Malawi diva, the highest ranking female musician in the history of Malawi.
Wow.
She passed away. And so those things have been happening this last month or so because of the COVID has really spread out with this new variant that's come in from South Africa.
Wow, that's so sad. And it's scary.
Today I received a message from my sister that our village school where I do my project, there's maybe 3 or 4 cases of poverty test at the school to our teachers.
And what about the children?
Right now, we haven't heard anything about the children yet, just the teachers that are involved in our project.
Will the children and the teachers be have access to a vaccine?
No. The only country that has vaccination right now in Africa is South Africa. There's nothing in Malawi. There's no vaccination in Malawi right now.
Why is that?
They can't afford it. It hasn't come in yet. So.
Oh, yeah.
The supplies are not reaching Africa at this point. But I think soon the World Health Organization will start making those distributions. But right now, just getting tested is a challenge. People are not being tested. So you don't know who's got it. And especially people in rural areas, there's no way for them to go and to go to the hospitals. They have to walk to go to the hospital to get tested. So that's a long distance.
How far is that?
Depending where you live, depending where you are in the bush or in the village. Sometimes some people are coming in from 20 miles away, some people 15, some people 5. But so depending where you are, you cannot be tested like we're doing here, that you have a chance to be tested and then somebody will be there to test you. That's not going to happen. This is a rural village lifestyle. In the city, it's different. When I was being tested in Lilongwe, we went to a medical testing area where they had all the necessary equipment there for you to be tested. And then you pay. You have to pay. You have to pay like $70 to get tested.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. My daughter told me they had to pay it went up to about $200 now.
That's ridiculous.
Exactly. So if you don't have that kind of money, it's not going to happen. So there's really no testing or tracking going on, you know, and only the people can afford it. If you can afford it, maybe you might get tested if it's available.
That's so unfair. People that need it the most. How does the COVID-19 pandemic, how does that change the trajectory of the children in the schools? I mean, with your sports foundation, Band Ebola, it just seemed like there was always a huge glimmer of hope because of that. How have things changed since the pandemic took hold?
Well, basically, schools have been closed because our program is for the school children. So when the pandemic hit, they had to shut down the whole school system. That means there's no after-school program. So for the last 9 months, there has been no after-school mentoring program. So cannot do any sports. So everything has been suspended until further notice. So right now, the children have just been staying home or roaming around in the village and with nothing to do because there's not much there. I mean, those who want to go to school, but that's only activity they have in their life. Like when school's open, the children can go to school. But then these schools really don't have any activities. My project only works with about, on a day-to-day basis, we work with about anywhere between 10 to 30 schools if we can give them the equipment, if their equipment is available. But sometimes there's no teachers and there's no equipment, so not everybody will be participating. So it poses a full volunteer charity. Everybody has to volunteer to help the children. So no one wants to do that unless they get paid. So we don't have a budget to pay people to work with the children or to coach them or to mentor them or to do all this program. Right now, it's just we'll be just trying to do it on a volunteer basis. But it'll be too much right now for the teachers to take off their time to run a program that is, with the pandemic, is dangerous.
I imagine that there's also the problem of the pandemic. People are afraid to even volunteer to work, whether they're getting paid or not, because of the pandemic. I mean, everybody that engages in this is actually signing to put themselves at risk. So signing up to put themselves in harm's way.
Right. So also all those are the major things that you're going to, because the different lifestyles that we're living in now with this pandemic or before pandemic, or the, when the project, Chautauqua Village project was being done, was to facilitate, to encourage the children to come to school, but most of them were not attending school. So with the pandemic, when they shut down the school, yeah, most kids were saying, hey, what the heck? I mean, who wants to go to school anyway? So I'm saying, they were just staying home and playing hockey, because there's no law that they had to go attending school. Otherwise, my project wouldn't have been designed to encourage or to promote education. Right now, that was the main objective. Now, with pandemic, closing the school, it kind of kills the program. You know, it kind of kills our objective. Our mission was to promote education, have the kids come to school. They can say, oh, they want to play soccer. Only if you come to school, you're going to be on the soccer teams. But if you're not coming to school, can I be on the soccer team? So that was helping them to get educated and in a nice environment and hopefully be happy and looking forward to doing it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we're trying to play soccer with the girls that have never played soccer before. So now that for 9 months, there has been no soccer, so the girls' skills now are going to be, they're going to be lost. They're going to be so far behind to what we're trying to do. And so when we restart, it's going to be a major, major undertaking to convince them that they can join the group and join the activities, because some of them were not really, you know, they were afraid to play soccer. They didn't feel comfortable to play soccer because it's a men's, it's a boys' game. So now we've got to find out different ways to attract them, to say, no, it's okay, you can come. We'll begin a program, beginner's program, so to speak, until they, you know, they get to figure out that this is something that they want to do, you know.
Now, this, given the circumstances, I imagine that it actually changes the fate of a lot of these children, especially the girls.
Okay, I said before, more girls are reluctant to attend school because the parents, usually they need the girls to stay home to take care of their siblings, to stay home, to do the house shows, to stay home and help out on the house. So this is a general rule that boys will be sent to school, girls will stay home. So most of the time, that's what happens. So with our program, we're trying to change that mindset that, no, we're going to give the girls opportunity also to be part of the community where they get to be educated, they get to be given opportunity to be empowered. And what has happened now is that most of them didn't have the motivation to go to school anyway, and the parents didn't want them to go to school. So now we have a large group of girls who are just kind of, they said, oh, no school, just stay home and get married. So these are young girls that probably we were trying to hide them from those kind of cultural norms that the parents usually would have wanted their girls to do is to see how many of them they can marry off to get married and find husbands. So it's going to take us a while now to re-educate and change the mindset of the girls and the parents to say, we need to get the girls into school and at least finish grade school and get the skills that they need.
I think that the mindset is the thing that would concern me, is how does this situation change the mindset? I mean, we know how it changes our mindset, but as a child, you know, that was just, it seems like they were on the cusp of actually having hope for their future. And I say on the cusp of it, you know, they were not quite there. What can people do? Is there anything that people can do from afar? I'm wondering.
Because we have a Banda Border, it's a Banda Border Sports Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things for us to restart the program, I'm going to have to change how I'm going to bring it to the village. Especially with the girls, we're going to try to maybe come up with an idea that we're going to get the girls first the opportunity to put them in a program that will empower them to feel good about themselves, and then to start moving the direction that we had hoped for them down the road. So I'm going to create a girls soccer leadership academy. So the academy, the main objective is not necessarily to say you're going to be playing soccer 24/7. No, you're going to come there using a soccer skills to be provided with life skills and with the conversation that we talk about the girls' rights, gender inequality, social justice issues that the most girls and women go through in their lives. But this is going to be an academy that we have. We're going to have people talking about different topics, and then at the same time, you know, we'll be playing and participating in the soccer skills. But at the same point, we want to make sure that they're going to become selected girls from each school, maybe 10, 12 schools. We're going to ask the school to give us maybe 3 or 4 girls that have the leadership understanding of going back to their school and helping out with their own community, helping out with their own community school, so that they can continue on their own to have these programs that they can say, we have learned at Leadership Skills Academy. So that's one thing I want to do right now. To do that, of course, we're trying to build an area that we can bring all the girls to one place where we're going to be teaching and coaching. So we've started to build a soccer field that will have changing rooms for the girls and the latrine, the girls, meaning toilets, so that we can start this on the grassroots, and hopefully more people will see the benefit. So we bring the girls to an environment where they will be trained. So they're going to be training and learning at the same time.
Right.
Training and learning at the same time. And then when they go back to their villages, they're going to have a select group of their girl teammates and pick up their own teams and start talking about what they have learned at the center, on the border training center, so to speak. So we're building a mini soccer complex that will have locker rooms, changing rooms. And that's where now our major donation, we want to go towards that, so that we're going to have them at a place where girls can feel comfortable. They don't have a place right now where they can do that.
I'm wondering if, because of the fact that the schools are closed, children tend to roam around when the schools are closed. And sometimes, you know how you walk down the street or in the park and you might see a kid during school hours, and you would wonder, like, why aren't you in school? Is it like that? Or are the children safe?
Well, yeah, it's right that there's a lot of gender-based violence going on in Malawi. Has been known for that. So a lot of girls can be easily abused,
yeah,
by the men, by the older men. So they hang around doing nothing. These are easy prey in terms of being abused, emotionally, physically, you name it. We're going to have to do a better job of re-educating or reassessing the situation. I found out the other day that most of the girls that we're dealing with in schools, most of them became pregnant, you know, during this pandemic period because they were home.
Wow.
Yeah, guys and men took advantage of them.
They're actually getting raped.
That's putting it the right way, yeah.
Yeah. That's, like, really heartbreaking, you know? It's just, I'm speechless when it comes to that. Is there anything that in Malawi, in these areas, is there law enforcement that can help protect these children?
Yeah, they talk about it, but there's no policy, you know, because it's a traditional. Traditionally, people marry off their people. It's understandable. It's a way of life, you know. Otherwise, they will tell me, who am I to tell them they cannot do what they've been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years? You know what I'm saying? So the laws have been put in right now. I wouldn't say laws. There have been some guidelines that have been given into the villages or to Malawi to tell them that no one should be getting married before they reach about 18 or something like that. But nobody follows it. There's no policing. It's impossible. They cannot police the village. There's nobody there. There's no police system.
Be nice if there were some protections in place for them.
Right. That's what I'm saying. There's no protection in the village. These kids are out and about. And families are just open door policy.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the schools are probably the only safe environment that they have. And the soccer field will probably be another safe environment for the girls that we're going to have to, that we're trying to bring into our program. Because they'll feel safe there, that they're not going to be bothered, and no one's going to be chasing them around. So they're chasing for soccer ball, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what we're trying to do, is so they can run away from those kind of habits and come to an area where they will learn to avoid being amongst those folks who are practicing those behaviors.
So what about the boys? I mean, what are they doing during this time? Because I know the girls have a whole different situation.
Well, the same thing. Yeah, the same thing with the boys. I mean, the young boys are roaming around and looking for something to do. And, you know, it could be a nice boy, has a good ideas, but if he goes with the wrong group, he's bound to be doing something that's not supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
There's no, what we call, monitoring them. So they're just kind of roaming around in the village and fishing for themselves and coming up with their own ways of keeping themselves busy. And hopefully they can go help mom and dad with farming, or go to the lake or fishing. But most of them are just kind of being lazy, doing nothing, and maybe going to the market, hustling here, hustling there, and getting into, you know, in a lot of troubles.
So is there any kind of, you said something about monitoring. Does anybody have a handle on how many kids are out there roaming around?
Well, I mean, in the old days when we were growing up in the village, everybody took care of the children. They understood. The children knew that if they were doing something they're not supposed to be doing, the parents going to find out. But in today's world, like you say, when the people hear children's rights, girls' rights, they kind of abuse that. This is, women want their rights, so they're going to have to carry their own goods. Leave them alone. They have to work hard when they're supposed to be helping them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So in children's rights, they say the children who say have a right not to go to school or have a right not to be to the mom or dad to talk to me. So they're misusing all this idea of them having a fresh mindset of dealing with the society and their cultural differences. So we have to do a better job of civic education of the village style, because they're not used to being given guidelines of saying, you cannot do this, that's dangerous. There's another way to do this that's going to be positive, that's going to help you. So those ideas are not there yet. We were trying to come up, those are the things that we're trying to do in our project, is give them another way to behave or doing another way to do things that will help them solve their own problems, maybe, and so that they can feel comfortable for being uncomfortable. And so that's the things that we were trying to incorporate.
This is a question. Are the people in Malawi and the children and just the general population, what is the level of understanding about what's actually going on with the pandemic? Are they aware that there's a pandemic? Because a lot, you know how it is, people walking down the street, you know, you see somebody, you don't know who has it or who doesn't have it. Do they understand what is going on? Or are they sheltered and insulated from that?
Well, 2 days ago, here's the thing. I received a text message from a local medical so-called doctor. And I asked him, how was the COVID-19? How are you doing with it at the medical center? He goes, there's nobody here.
What?
Nobody wants to come. Nobody wants to come to the hospital because they're afraid they will catch the disease.
Oh, my God.
So that's the beginning of that. And secondly, he doesn't have enough PPE at the hospital. And he just said people are staying home and they're dying at home.
That's awful.
So people who have other illness in terms of, women who are pregnant, want to go deliver a baby, or someone might just be sick with malaria, they can go to the hospital, get medication. So they say no one is coming to the hospitals because they're afraid they'll catch COVID-19.
That's a reasonable fear.
Right. So science is non-existent over there. And so to tell them science is, what is science? They don't know. These are local village people who most of them never went to school. And they never took a science class. They don't understand what their body is going through. So it's difficult. This is very difficult. It's not easy.
Yeah, I can hear it. And so it seems that the level of ignorance is causing tremendous detriment to the population. Is there anybody going out and telling the people? Is there anyone? Is there an area?
Yeah. The government has tried to educate or to give the information to the local chiefs, to the local leadership, but, they're not following through. They're saying, well, you guys are lying to us. You're making money off our dead bodies. So it's difficult to convince the local people to be tested and to go to the hospitals for this other illness. If it's happening here with people who have science, can you imagine it happening to people who have no science?
Yeah.
It's happening here in America. People have sense. We're scared to go out and do things because you don't know. So over there, there's no distancing. You say washing your hands with soap. There's no soap in the area. There's no soap in the village. They can't afford soap, right? And water is very scarce. Water is very scarce. You just don't use water for the sake of washing your hands. You say that's not practiced. Right? They only wash their hands when they're going to go eat something, when they're going to go touch something. Just to say for so many other moments, most schools, they don't have a place to, children, they have no place where to wash their hands when they're at school. There's no wells there. There's no pipe water. So it's impossible to deal with in the village areas. So you're saying that wash your hand, social distance. Well, over there, the social distance is almost impossible because they all sit together. They do everything together.
Right.
And there's a communal living. Is meaning you're doing things together. Doing things separately is like, yeah, you think somebody is sick or something, or you don't want to touch somebody because it's not the right way to do it. So it's a different way of looking at it, but it's going to take time to convince the local people that these are the things that they should be doing to protect themselves, because they're thinking the guy with the mask on is the one that's going to give me the disease.
And it's not, I mean, I can say personally that wearing mask to shield from disease is not something that's totally new. I'm like shocked that the lack of water and soap, and there's no, how could they possibly fight the disease if they don't have those two things?
Exactly. So this is going to take, it's going to heat, if it's hitting Africa right now, there's graveyards that nonstop.
Wow.
People are dying nonstop right now. And people, don't get me wrong, people were dying before COVID-19 with other diseases. So people are saying there in the villages, they say, well, you guys, we've been dying here with other diseases all the time. So this is just another one. Well, we have to deal with it. You know what I'm saying?
There was malaria, there was AIDS, and now there's COVID.
Right. Yeah. Ebola, or that now it's COVID. Now you're saying, what is this? They've been dying with this, more malaria deaths there than any other disease. People die of malaria more than any other disease in our area.
Well, then you're putting it in perspective for the rest of the people, for the people listening. You know, I didn't know that. You know, you think COVID, couldn't get any worse.
No, this is not new. They're saying, okay, so it's another disease, but what happened to malaria? How come you people have a vaccination for this disease, but you have nothing for malaria?
I know. Yeah, I thought about that too.
How come you're doing it so fast? So they're scared to take it, but they're thinking you did something that you want to kill them with that.
Well, the people in this country that feel that way too.
So you can understand how that's so deeply ingrained in their mindset that you bring something to our society, our culture, that we don't understand. And so you are the enemy, you know what I'm saying? You're not trying to help us. So this needs a lot of in-house training and...
Education,
civic education at its best, just for them to understand why they have to do things differently to protect themselves. But to them, death, again, to the local people, death is a way of life. It's that's something that they've seen pretty much on a weekly, daily basis.
It sounds like they accept it. I'm wondering, because I know that some years ago, pharmaceutical companies would send people to the countries to educate them about a certain disease and build latrines, build like water sources. I'm wondering if the pharmaceutical companies know about what's going on in Malawi.
Yeah, I mean, right now, those things are going on. Don't get me wrong. The World Health Organization has those programs about how to treat your water and how to dig latrines or toilets and how to do all these health issues. But with now the pandemic, those other things have been put on hold.
Yeah.
And people now are focusing more on this problem. And then the other problem has been put on the back burner. So in the area where it's poor, this is one of the poorest countries in the world, that's actually to undertake. So they're just going to let it go.
I wonder if there's a dollar amount of money that someone could throw at the situation and deal with the infrastructure with regard to education and also with regard to the facilities, it sounds like that is needed. I'm wondering if there's a dollar amount.
I think right now, like you said before, education, I think this pandemic is showing everyone that the lack of understanding that what we need, these folks needed the, when I bring my program, I was just trying to do basic education so that they will understand what science is, what they understand, how to count things, how to take care, how these children can take care of themselves. So we give them a basic education just to learn the ABCs of life. And right now, each school needs those kind of programs. But there's no funding towards those programs for these children. So they need to have that kind of a program where they're doing things with hands-on, the things that they can use for themselves and learn. Like right now with the laptops, computer, they can see what you mean by science. People can show them. But then there's no electricity,
there's no electricity.
You can't bring a laptop or computer to a place where there's no electricity. So it's tough. That's why I'm thinking, if I'm going to be in an area where I've got 10 schools, if I can bring boys and girls to my training program where we're going to teach them life skills, maybe some of them will gain knowledge that they can take home to teach themselves, to teach their families to do things a little bit differently and to protect themselves. So that's what my center, my learning center or training center will be dealing with when we restart. We're hoping that we can give them that understanding, hopefully, and so at grassroots, so that when they become older, they will know what they should be doing with their lives, they should be doing with their bodies, they should be doing with their communities, and hopefully, So funding for those kind of things are important. That's why we're trying to do that. We're going to try to do that as much as possible. But the government, in some areas, they're trying it. The World Health Organization has given out money to the districts, but it's not going to be enough. It doesn't matter. But it was each village has its own problems,
Yeah, it's something that's far more complex than one could imagine. I'm wondering also what's going on in my mind is that if there is affiliation with the United Nations, affiliation with the World Health Organization that could help Malawi, and is there a place where people can donate money specifically to help Malawi?
They have those things going on with the Minister of Health. The Minister of Health and the United Nations have a program that they've been given funding from their World Health Organization and United Nations. That's the only way you're going to go through those kind of things. We're not allowed to touch that as entities, as individuals. That's why I'm doing my program. My project is to facilitate. Banda Border Sports Foundation wants to facilitate those ideas and finding partnership to come with us and to do some of those things together with us at the grassroots, where some of that money is that coming in from the United Nations or World Health Organization is not reaching the rural area people. So we want to bring our project, bring awareness that these are the things that they should be doing and having for their children and for the schools and for the girls especially, that they can learn to be comfortable for being uncomfortable.
Okay, so where do people need to contact?
They can go to the Banda Border Sports Foundation.org, which is BandaBolaS Sports Foundation.org. Banda Border Sports Foundation.org. And my phone number, they can reach me at 518-364-2842. And you can go to the website and you can donate there. There's a page where people can donate at the website. That would be appreciated so that we can restart our program. Right now, we have suspended our program until we're ready to build the infrastructure for them to come back and do the things that they need to do.
So I'm going to tell the audience, BandaBolaSportsFoundation.org, BandaBolaSportsFoundation.org, to help restart this program. And I'll just say that from where I sit, from what I'm hearing, it's not just about sports, it's about education, and it's about health.
It's about the whole thing, the whole mind, the whole works. Girls' rights, civil education, children education, boys' lives, everything. We try to teach them all the skills that they need to survive.
And this is something that's the template's in place. You just need to restart. So I'll encourage people to donate. And I thank you for everything that you do, Kenny. It's very, very generous. You're very generous of spirit. And you don't really have to be. I always say that you don't have to be that way, but you are. And my heart goes out to the people of Malawi, and especially the children. And I want to have you back on for a follow-up on this, because it's something that touches my heart, and I can't imagine that it does not touch the hearts of others. I'm really counting on people that are listening to hear how important and how desperate the situation is. It's not, you know, and so anything anyone can do is important. That's why I love doing these kind of shows, just to bring awareness to the rest of the planet about what's going on among us. I mean, we are in this together, but everybody's situation is so unique. And this particular situation is very, very urgent. So I want everybody to know, Band Ebola Sports Foundation.org. And Kenny Banda, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. You're a wonderful man. And I hope that everybody hears what's going on and just opens their heart a little bit. If you don't do anything, at least say a prayer. And I wait till the next time I come back on. I'll have another guest. And I feel very humbled by this. And thank you, Kenny. And I'll say goodnight to the audience. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.